Welcome back to the Inside Texas Baseball Show. I'm your host, Evan Veith, as always, joined next to me by Nash Talks Texas. Nash, before we get into some of this baseball talk, I just got a haircut. And you know what else is getting chopped off? The price tag of the Inside Texas subscription over the next month. You can right now join for $1 and get a full year of access with the Inside Texas Baseball, Inside Texas Basketball, everything with Inside Texas that you can get from recruiting to all the game updates when we actually have football. Right now, baseball is a little bit in the offseason, but football, it's the best time to be subscribed right here in August. You can get Inside Texas for $1 for your first week. And as a bonus, your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic. We also have, of course, Paul Wadlington's 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, his Thinking Texas Football book. We've been telling you guys about this for weeks now. If you haven't already gotten it, I don't know what you're doing. If you are any sort of Longhorn football fan, you need to have this in front of you before the season, just to hear about recruiting, the players on the team, and the rest of the SEC. It is the perfect thing to read if you are into Texas football. But, of course, we're here to talk about baseball, Nash, and we're going to talk about a little bit of like a different subject because we haven't talked a ton about recruiting on the show. We've mentioned names. We're going to look a little bit more holistically at how Texas has recruited in the past because you've got this great graphic up for us, and we're really going to key in on 2023 through 2025. But talk a little bit about this 2017 to 2022 with David Pierce because – recruiting was not really up to par what you think of at the University of Texas.
Yeah, no, it really wasn't. And, I mean, this is honestly really – if you were to go back a little bit further, and I probably should have, you can really start to see why we needed to get rid of Augurio. And it just came down to he was losing momentum on the recruiting trail. And you're not getting them big dogs on campus, and they're all going to LSU and all these other things. And really – that's part of what led to the SEC kind of taking off, is they were able to get all these big players. Now, you go and so David Pierce, he actually did. I mean, after that 2017 class, it's just like for Steve Sarkisian, Charlie Strong, or anybody, you know, any new coach in year one, it's hard to like, you know, get after them for having a really bad recruiting class year one. But I will say for this perfect game, they only go from 1 to 100. So we were almost completely unranked in the recruiting rankings for David Pierce's year one. But you saw him really recover to an eighth recruiting class. But then it just, you know, being a top 20 recruiting class, top 25, that's not enough for the University of Texas. University of Texas, you can have a 23rd recruiting class a year. You can have a 22nd. If it comes every once in a few years. At the University of Texas, you have to be bringing in top 10 talent every single year. And that just was not the case, clearly, under David Pierce. And I do want to make a note that 2021 year, that's largely affected from the COVID season. I mean, we only had four signees from that entire year. And they were all like 400 or higher in recruit rankings. So – And the rankings, yes, they aren't perfect, but they give us a good idea of, you know, this is getting better under Jim Sosnick.
And your point about the top 25 is like any sport at the University of Texas, you're expecting them to bring in that 25th or better class. But not only that, it's baseball. This is the sport where they're arguably, probably are the number one team all time. It's the expectation that players want to play here, especially, you know, from those Dallas and San Antonio hotbeds. So, yeah, it was not looking great up until 2023, which if you want to pull that up, Connor, that was when you really saw Pierce get back in the swing of things with recruiting. This is a class that I remember pretty fondly. Travis Sikora, who now just got Tommy John in the Nationals organization, right when I think the Nats have a good pitcher coming up. But we kind of knew he wasn't getting there. But getting Will Gasparino to campus was a huge win for the Longhorns at the time. Number 44 overall, guy from out on the West Coast, giant center fielder. Obviously, now he's not on the team anymore. But that was seen as one of the biggest pickups for that Texas team. You're seeing – you know, Casey Board is still on the team, was a really good player. D. Kennedy had a good freshman year. Hudson Hamilton's still around. We had Oliver Service and guys like Tumas last year. But this was one of the better classes that we've seen. And it was kind of it seemed like he was picking up momentum a little bit, didn't he, Nash?
Yeah, I mean, Will Gasparino was a top five player in the portal this year. So, like, he was and still is a legit talent. Cole Sevig, that guy, he just kind of, you know, ended up moving off. Casey Borba, obviously, still on the roster. But, like, guys like D. Kennedy, I mean, D. Kennedy is a dude. It just didn't really work out. And I think that was more or less a little bit of fear from the, you know, the coaching change from what I heard. Like he's still very much, if you saw him like at the Texas game when Kansas State came in town, he's still giving up hook 'em to fans, right? He's still talking with that. Like this is a guy that still likes Texas, but I think the thing that you know just sticks out to me is most of these guys have left. You know,
yeah.
They kind of you do in this new world, you commit to coaches, not schools. It used to be completely the other way. I remember like the Colin Johnson quote: "Hey, we commit. I'm committing to the University of Texas, not a coach." Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the way with the transfer portal anymore. And you see that with a guy like Easton Tumis. There's plenty of talent inside this class. It just ended up kind of leaving away because David Pierce left, which is understandable.
Yeah, and this class also had Tommy Farmer in it. He's I think right below Service in this screenshot. But there's a lot of guys who you saw that Pierce made some good ideas there. He had the right way of thinking about it. I mean, Travis Sikora would have been starting as a freshman. You had Sars and Gasparino and Kennedy as freshmen. Hudson Hamilton made an impact immediately. So did Tommy Farmer. But the star power there is maybe what's missing because Gasparino didn't turn to a star. And as you turn over this 2024 class, if you bring it up, Connor, that's where, you know, this is kind of a dual class. This is a lot of Pierce involved, but some late additions that were Jim Schlossnagel. This is my first year. I want some of the players. And you're seeing the numbers are a little better already, but a lot of these guys are gone too. Richardson, Rarick, Luna, Navarre, Scott, they all were top 200 guys that made it to campus. And they are now off to elsewhere because, hey, you know, they might have been more committed to Pierce or they just see what's happening with the Schloss team that was going on. And they're like, hey, we'd like to go somewhere else. But you're seeing a big one right there at 147 in Dylan Volantis. And down at 500 out of the screenshot, if you can believe he was that low ranked, is Adrian Rodriguez. So Texas in this one class with David Pierce had a better two players immediately than probably two or three of the last ones that were brought in by Pierce. And I think that says a lot about what Schlossnagel did as a recruiter because those were his guys. Rodriguez and Volantis were his dudes that he brought in with little Pierce involved. And I think that's what strikes me the most already from seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of – this is a lot kind of the same. And I think this is also a little bit to do with Jim Schlossnagel coming in year one and then really kind of hammering home in the portal. And like, because now he has an understanding of what he wants for this team and where he wants to move going forward. And, you know, if you're a guy like Samuel Richardson, it's hard to sit there. If you're a top 50 yeah. guy, you know, it's hard to be on the bench, right? And it like you said, like with Adrian Rodriguez being his guy, it just doesn't look like the playing time at third base is going to be there or was going to be there.
Yeah.
Now, you still got Jason Flores and Dylan Volantis. I think that goes a lot to do with the pitching staff and, you know, having a Max Wiener on board. But a guy like a Drew Rarick, I know it kind of probably was a really tough decision for him, but, you know, he's still moving over to another really, really good pitching coach and Skip Johnson. I know Skip is the head coach, but, you know, yeah. Skip obviously has an influence on the pitchers. And there's going to be more playing time and more opportunity. That just wasn't going to be the case here at Texas in year two. And then you go and you look at, I think, another guy like a Carson Luna, man. This is a guy that was one of the Pierce guys, and he just kind of won. I think he probably – there was starting time looking available for him, but
yeah.
It just – I think that he just kind of wanted a new coaching staff.
Yeah, Luna was
no inside information on that, but it's just, you know, reading in between the lines of, hey, he was going to start.
Yeah, Luna was the one who was – Flores gone. He's the only other shortstop on the roster. Even if they bring in Becerra, there's still the chance that Luna competes for that spot as a sophomore. And, I mean, you see he was a top 150 player in this class. It was bound to happen. So, yeah, a lot of these guys from this class had that potential, but they just weren't – they weren't the guys for Schlossnagel. And even cut off from the screenshot is the guys who Pierce was going to bring in, which is also part of why that this firing of him was such kind of a shock. It wasn't a shock, but it was also like, wow, it's happened, is that he had the number three player in Bryce Rayner committed, number 11, Theo Gillum, number 31, Levi Sterling. All three of those guys were – first-round picks. I think Rayner is now a top 15 prospect in the MLB already. Like, these were – he had some real players committed alongside all of these guys that you're seeing here, minus Volantis. So this was a really good class built up by Pierce. But I think as we go over to 2025, Connor, you can just kind of see that level of difference when Schloss has had a full offseason and had his guys able to come in. Because this new class, we've talked about it a lot. We lost over Cason Cunningham and Gavin Feeney. Oh, we don't have the 2025. Sorry about that, guys. But Cason Cunningham and Gavin Feeney were the two guys that obviously weren't going to make it to campus. But then you look and see how many players, if you want to go back to that main graphic, Connor, we had that were just in the top 100 outside of them, 7 is the number with the third overall class. Only 3 of those guys, Robert X. Mitchell being the other one who ended up going to the Angels, was drafted. So you have 4 top 100 players making it to campus. That's more top 100 players than were even recruited in the last 2 years, right? So that's in 2022 and 2023. So that's what you're seeing is the difference is he's getting guys to stay. And I think that's what's going to show up as soon as this season, but really 2026 when they have probably the 1 or 2 class. And then also they're going to have just such a good group of players that are in their sophomore year. Before we hear from you, Nash, we're going to hear from Josh Holden and then talk a little bit more about this 2025 class.
Hi, guys. Sorry to interrupt, but if you're thinking about buying or selling a home in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area, you need to contact Josh Holden. The Metroplex is massive, and the local real estate market is full of nuances and subtleties only an experienced agent like Josh can help you navigate. From Preston Hollow to Highland Park, uptown to old East Dallas, Josh will be there to guide you through the process of buying or selling your home. Now, Josh is a UT grad, a lifetime Texas X. He's reliable, savvy, and from a personal perspective, he's a really great guy to chat with. So why don't you give him a call and chat with him today about your real estate needs in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area. His number is 972-917-8081. That's 972-917-8081. Or you can reach him at his website, which is joshholdenrealestate.com. All the contact details are in the description below. Thanks so much. And back to the show.
So Nash, with all that's been said, it's pretty fair to say, would you agree that with this current Texas team and how Schloss Engel's recruiting and even using the portal, there's no one who's really, yeah, there's Perfect Games website. There's really no one. And if there is, it's LSU apart from those two teams that are going to have the amount of young talent that Texas is bringing in over the next 2 years and then eventually turning into all pro or, you know, all conference level players. How many teams are going to be as talented as this Texas team going forward?
I would say probably Tennessee and Florida are definitely going to be in the running. They're mm-hmm. definitely – they're up there. They got really good coaching. The resources are there. I think even a Vanderbilt, you know, could – like they're in the recruiting rankings up on top. For the next few years. Sure. So it's just going to come down to how long will Corbin be coaching. But, you know, Tech, it just – I think if you go and you look at, like, you know, the recruiting, it's just going to – it shows really and it magnifies how much the SEC is going to be competitive moving forward. And it, on top of how much it already is competitive. Now, I know it's going to – you have a lot of these guys that get signed and all that stuff, but – if Homer can go here to the 2026 or the 2025 class, where you can actually see, and similar to what David Pierce was able to do, but it's a little bit more magnified with a guy like a Jim Schlossing on the 2026 class or 2025 class, the ability to go and grab, you know, top 150 guys. There's 1, 2, 3. Yeah, there it is. So you got 4 dudes in the top 150. That all got signed. But outside of that, you got 5 dudes. So of the 9 top 150 players, we brought 5 to campus.
Yeah, McCurran right there.
This is the type of stuff that gets you to Omaha and starts winning you games in Omaha. That's the type of recruiting. And I think that this is a product that we can expect to, you know, see moving forward, especially with a guy like Nolan Cain on campus. But you look at how Jim Schlossingle has recruited at TCU, you know, getting some of the big names there. And then also, I think this is really interesting because I would love to see it happen at Texas, obviously. But if you remember, Jim Schlossingle back in the day, he was kind of known for, you know, being able to have those guys like a Matt Perkey or something like that. Hey, like, hey, here's my name being tossed around the first round, and I'm gonna turn down a top 20 pick to come back to campus, you know, to play. So Jim Schlossnagel, it's not like a deal where he seems reliant on a guy like a Nolan Cain to be able to have this recruiting. He can go out there and obviously recruit on his own. But, I mean, having a guy like Nolan Cain, that's worth its weight in gold. obviously you see that in the recruiting rankings over year to year.
Definitely. Having those kind of directors, and I think that Drew Bishop, I believe is the name, is behind the scenes, is also really good.
Oh, they're all massive. Mason McCray from the analytics. I mean, the amount of stuff that they are able to go and pitch to these guys, to pitch to these, you know, young men, they're able to give them a very, very as accurate as a picture as they can find anywhere on the future of their career.
Yeah, and that's what's so important. You mentioned the SEC rankings, and I just did a quick little search up to make sure I had it right. And the only other team that's not an elite SEC program that has two straight top eight classes, 2025, 2026, is Virginia over in the ACC. So it's Virginia, Wake Forest, and then like six SEC teams that are all duking it out for the top young players in the country. So Texas is going to have to look out for the Vanderbilts, the Tennessees, the Floridas, the Arkansas even. And of course, LSU, who's just right now, they're the pinnacle of college baseball.
Well, and now the Mississippi States.
Yeah, and that's another great one is Mississippi State. Let's talk about Virginia. This is how you start, though, I'd say, Nash. You're not going to build Rome in a day. You're not going to win a national championship in a year or two. And I don't think they're going to be favored to win any sort of national championship this year. That's going to come over the next few seasons when they start really building up this roster the same way that Sark did. But when you start with, let's just do the two top 50 guys who we can focus on, one a hitter, one a pitcher, Anthony Pack Jr. in the outfield, Sam Cozart on the mound. Like, how are these guys getting to campus when previous years, anyone who's in the top 50 is going straight to the MLB? Do you have an insight on why this was the case, or do you think this is just kind of the Schloss angle effect of why these guys are getting here?
I mean, I think it just comes down to Max Wiener, especially like when you're specifically talking about the pitchers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're able to go and we're able to keep, you know, not just top 100, but top, like you said, in the case of Sam Cozart, top 50. Like, now, remember, Dylan Volantis is ranked he was ranked 147th. Now, I mean, these rankings aren't perfect, right? But are a perfect game, ironically. But rankings aren't perfect. But, I mean, he's a full 100 spots behind Cozart, right? And just getting these level of pitchers to campus is massive. And if we're able to do this over a 2-3 year period, if you look up and you got three starters that are like Dylan Volantis and, you know, in a relief bullpen full of guys that are like dudes, like that's how you go and you win games and you win tournaments. Getting a guy like Anthony Pack, I mean, that kind of all ironically, like with how things felt going into before the draft, I think we probably felt like Anthony Pack was one of the guys that we were not going to see at all.
Yeah, rid him off.
and then we're getting these transfer guys in, you know, the transfers, they're safe, right? Well, no, they weren't. But getting a guy like Anthony Pack after having those transfers fall off, that just it. I think I said it before, but it's found money, especially with how like just smooth and fluid his bat is. Because even if he doesn't play in year one, this is a dude that I think in year two could really, really just jump out of nowhere and become a stud.
Type of leadoff hitter guy that teams pray to get onto their rosters is what he brings with his contact and speed. You also look at just go down that state tab and see what you're looking at with the guys who the top three guys you got here. None of them are from the state of Texas. You got a Cali guy to not get drafted and come in. Pack not getting drafted wasn't a skill thing. It was he probably hit a certain point and told teams, I don't want to be drafted. Cozart from North Carolina. Crossland from Arizona. Some of these Texas guys are too good, so they're going off to the MLB, like in the case of Mitchell, who did not get paid like a 13th rounder, I'll tell you that. That's just such a good thing to see is that all these hotbeds, you know, when you think of baseball, you do think California, Texas are probably the top two. But that North Carolina down to Georgia, Florida area is really good at baseball. So that's an example of Cozart, who you're getting a 6'8 kid from the East Coast to say, no, I don't want to play in the ACC. I don't want to play at Florida or Georgia. I'm coming to Texas and going to play there. Think about what this rotation could look like in 2 years, kind of what you were saying. As when you get to the front part of this next offseason, where we are right now, or maybe shoot to December of 26, Volantis in the Friday spot. Bing or Flores are still going to be around and pitching well. That's not to mention anyone else they could have brought in. And then guys like Cozart, Crossland, or Rumble, who take your pick. One of those three is going to be an important piece of this pitching staff this season. So you probably have your fourth outfielder already in Pack, who may even get a lot of extra playing time in the early season with Williams coming. Jonah Williams being a baseball player, who, by the way, if you scroll all the way down to the end of this list, Connor, you don't have to if you don't want to, but he's right there at like 400, 445, no picture, Jonah Williams. So if number 445 is doing that a year early, think about what any of these guys can do for this team. And I know you love Maddox Munster, so that's another one.
Yeah, I mean, like a guy like Michael Winner, I think, is a guy that can come in and like have a legit role in year one. These rankings, it's really not that perfect, but I think it really just kind of goes to show, one, a little bit of the randomness of baseball, but two,
yeah,
just you do want to. It's not a deal where you're just like, okay, well, let's just go ahead and just throw a bunch of darts out there, and we're gonna have a good team, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's not like this negates all that we were just talking about having, you know, good recruiting class rankings and, you know, having talented kids come to campus. But being able to, like you said, I mean, just listen off all the pitchers. If someone is just looking at the 2025 recruiting class this year, and you just look at the pitchers that, like, actually made it to campus, I mean, this is the type of recruiting that you're going to start to actually see real dividends pay off in the next two to three. Like, In two to five years, man, Texas is going to be one of those programs in baseball that people are like, well yeah, it's Texas. They've always been like that. And no, we haven't always been like that. I mean, and not to say that we weren't, but the last 5 to 10 years, we certainly have not been to where Texas should have been. So it'll be nice to get back to that. But Texas is about to go right back to being that dominant level of a powerhouse where we have so much talent on this roster that, I mean, a lot of them are legit future shoo-in for the minors. So,
yeah,
it's a good time to be a Texas fan, and this is certainly stuff I like to see. These are graphics I like to make.
It sure is a good time, and at a time like this, there's no better time to be subscribed over to Inside Texas. Of course, $1 for your first week if you join right now, leading up to this Ohio State game on August 30th. This is with this nifty little graphic. As a bonus, of course, your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic. So make sure you check that out. And then don't miss Paul's book. I've already hyped it up at the start and end of all these shows. If you like Texas football, you should have already bought this. Either way, you should go get it now if you haven't already. Thank you all so much for listening to this kind of quicker episode of the Inside Texas Baseball Show. We're not going to get a ton of these throughout the fall, so it's always good to check in with Nash here. We'll be talking about some of the regular roster the next time we're on the show. Should be next week, so get looking forward to that. Thank you so much, Nash, as always, for being on. I've been your host, Evan Beef. We'll see you later.
Welcome.